Happy Mother's Day, everyone. It is Sunday, May 13th, 2007. I'm the uncle.
And I am Charlie. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It's a special Mother's Day episode, as you heard.
That's right. So for all of our listeners, if you haven't bought your mother a card and some flowers and some candy, you really messed up.
That's right. I mean, you can send them tomorrow, but it's going to be a day late and a dollar short, as they say. But maybe you better make it, yeah, 2 dozen roses tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, you got to be extra nice, because I think a lot of the things, at least many of my acquisitions, and I know many of Charlie's, were hooked up by our wonderful mothers. So.
That's right. So you just got to remember where you came from. Remember the people who helped you out along the way. And my goodness, who else plays a bigger part than your mom? So step up, folks.
Exactly.
Now, so, and you know, Mother's Day, and we're talking about our past and the things that our parents maybe helped us with, and what does that segue into more than let's say collecting, at least here at the Preserve, and certainly the way the collecting hobby gets furthered these days is in large part due to eBay, which, you know, that's true.
That's right. In many collecting circles, eBay has been affectionately nicknamed Evil Bay.
Ah, well, it's a good name for it. Or as our friend Abyss likes to say, it's a great way to spend a lot of money in a very short amount of time without realizing what you're doing. In that same vein, we have, I thought, a little eBay watch that has come to my attention from a coworker of mine, actually, a friend who, from this coworker, I actually acquired that large TurboGrafx game lot a few months ago that he had had from when he was, he's a little older than me, so he was kind of more of a I guess maybe even had his own income when the TurboGrafx was out, but he's a total just hardcore gamer from back in the day, all sorts of games, and was a big TurboGrafx fan and had these games actually since the very beginning when he had the system and they were in Toys R Us. So I got these games from him, and he has amazing other collections, and he's parting with a lot of them now, which I think is too bad, but, you know, everybody does what they got to do. And he recently put up a bunch of his tabletop games, which are things I necessarily haven't really gotten into so much. A lot of his Warhammer stuff and the figurines, you know, Uncle, all those like Gozer's Little Men, really.
Oh, yes, yes. Both Charlie and I have a friend who we affectionately nicknamed Gozer, and Gozer has spent several hundred dollars on these very finely detailed, minute sculptures, and I think there's a game you can play with them. I've always wanted to get into it, but I have zero painting ability and zero patience to assemble models.
Yeah, I mean, the dedication that these folks have is really admirable for what it is, that they will, you know, with a single hair paintbrush, sit there for hours on end and detail the broadswords and the scabbards of these inch-tall little men. It's really fabulous, and it's something I have no experience with, and Uncle has no experience with it either, but some folks do, and apparently, as my coworker found, some folks are willing to pay fairly excellent money for the stuff that he had lying around. And this included, you know, batches of figures. I guess you have like a whole division of, you know, warriors, or you have one of the game expansion packages that goes with these little guys. And he was getting prices that he hadn't really imagined at all. And he's pretty savvy. He keeps up with his stuff. But this, again, is in line with kind of my ongoing theory of the prices on eBay really kind of skyrocketing and going nuts. But I learned something really interesting talking to him after he came over and said, hey, go to my page, look at these prices I'm getting. And the auction ended, and he said, you know what? I got to ship a lot of stuff overseas right now. I said, oh, that's interesting. What, you know, so what's up with that? He said almost 70 or 80% of the people who bought from this auction, there was like 40 or 50 items he put up, were foreign bidders. And he pointed out to me that the dollar is so weak right now that it is extraordinarily cheap for people overseas in like a developed nation to actually purchase goods on an American economic scale. And so what I think we're seeing, Uncle, and this it's such an obvious thing, but it hadn't occurred to me, these spikes that we're seeing in the toy markets and in really a lot of these markets that are easily open to overseas buyers, such as eBay, where anyone can just go and bid, is we're seeing the weakness of the dollar being translated into a lot higher prices for those of us at home.
You know, Charlie, that's absolutely amazing and mind-blowing that you found this out, because many of the auctions that I have listed, and of course, you know, I have ADD, so it's hard for me to actually make myself list anything or do anything.
Well, yeah.
Almost all of them I had sold to foreigners, and I had always figured that they were unable to make the purchases at retail. Like for what it, not to disparage their country, but it's kind of hard to get Transformers when you live in
Absolutely.
Turkey.
Yeah, when you've got the U.S. items, you think, oh, well, maybe they're hoping to, because imports and whatever, if it gets exported to their country, it'll be really expensive on a store shelf or something.
Exactly. And I had always figured it largely due to people being into the same thing, but just being unable to buy it.
Yeah.
Like that entire Star Wars lot of action figures that I had most recently sold, I don't even remember where I shipped it to, but
It
it
was like
certainly wasn't
Turkey or
stopping at those
something, or
rest.
yeah, you sent it to like Turkey or Istanbul. Off it goes.
It was someplace crazy.
Yeah, somewhere you wouldn't expect, necessarily from the U.S. eBay, because eBay has all these different flavors all over the world, and it's interesting because obviously, I guess you can go to any one of them. I haven't really checked out the others, but I assume most people end up going to the U.S. one, I guess, in order to find the largest collection of items. And certainly now, if my theory holds, that and the theory of my coworker, that people go to the U.S. eBay in order to really cash in on being able to outbid a lot of the U.S. bidders, and really it not being much of an economic dent. The way, like, if somebody outbids me at $50, but the dollar's so weak, that $50 is not going to be the same to them as it is to me.
It really, it's amazing. Globalization comes over and it screws you and me on eBay.
That's right. What is the result of the brave new economic system screws us out of toys on eBay? It's sad.
I had, no, this is just a joke, but I thought globalization was all fine and dandy. But once you start messing with my Captain Power toys, I mean, we got to do something.
Hey man, that's no joke. You didn't
It's
believe
no
me.
joke. Let's call up those protesters that, set Seattle on fire. We got to do something about this.
We'll just set it back on fire. That's fine.
Yeah, seriously.
So this after my long, months long ranting of it here on the UncleCast, I feel, if not closure, at least kind of progress in terms of, surprisingly and in an unexpected source, getting some input into kind of what I was experiencing, just kind of being in the thick of things, and because I window shop on eBay too much, and then finally getting some solid data behind it that really makes good sense, like good economic sense. So.
Well, Charlie, I personally think that the real interesting experiment is going to be when, let's face it, we have a new president in place
Right.
and the dollar does what it's supposed to and strengthens versus other currency which weaken. I mean, will we see the inverse effect happen now?
Right, and that'll be really interesting to watch. I think if we bide our time and kind of wait and see, this is a really cool long-term experiment. Long-term on our scale, which is like a year, to
Right.
watch unfold.
No, I definitely agree, and I'm very excited about the prospect of not getting screwed with prices on eBay.
Oh, that is an exciting prospect, isn't it? Now, and so really beyond. The standard excitement of the various things that I've been buying on eBay that I really shouldn't, though. One more note, I guess, will be the continued delving into 1980s comic books, which is a terrible Pandora's box that I have opened now, blamed mostly on my graffiti friend Change having shipped me for free 200 or 300 comic books in the mail, which really, led to the discovery of that Prior's Place ad, and then just a slippery slope straight down into the bottomless abyss of collecting that really is comic books. That, yeah, yes.
Charlie, I just wanted to say everything ties back into everything else. The end is in the beginning. Up on www.parrygamepreserve.com, you had posted a phenomenal advertisement which was in the back of one of your comic books. And it was all about Meatloaf
Ah,
rocking for the kids
that's
and the
right.
hero showing up being like, "We'll help you, Meatloaf." I distinctly remember reading that very same advertisement on one of the first comic books I had ever gotten.
No kidding.
Yes, and just out of all of like the weird, like Starburst candy ads or Skittles or
Yeah.
Oreo cookies or Bonkers gum, you happen to pick that one. It was amazing.
That is excellent to hear, Uncle. I'm glad that that cosmic significance continues to hound us.
And again, in the very year 2007, I, of course, operate, my home base of operations is Long Island, New York, at Jones Beach, the local concert summer series. Meatloaf is going to be a guest.
No kidding.
Yes, I am not kidding at all. You know, Charlie, I think it's trying to tell me something. I think I have to go see Meatloaf.
I think that you have to go see the humongous star of the universe, as they say.
Is the comic book right? Dick
That's
Davis.
Right. And not even like the most humongous star, just the humongous star, not referring to maybe physical size or stardom. That's left up for the reader to decide.
Oh, it's such a phenomenal piece of mid-80s, I don't know, insanity. But, you know, his name is Robert Paulson, Charlie. And
that's right. Thank you. Thank you very much. In fact, the guy who wrote Fight Club, who's this very unassuming dude, we just saw on Anthony Bourdain, which has become really one of my favorite new shows on TV. It's kind of like a travel show centered around food. Anthony Bourdain's one of these guys, I guess, used to be on the Food Channel. I don't know if you've ever watched his show.
No, I never have.
Yeah, it's pretty quality. Bourdain basically, like, drinks and eats and smokes a lot. He's, like, rail thin and really disgruntled at, like, humanity and life, and just goes around and has these great adventures with his buddies all over the world. And it's a pretty fun show. I recommend it really highly, actually, and I think it's out on DVD. We just finished watching Malaysia and Uzbekistan, where he just kind of, you know, goes around and samples a little culture and eats some sheep's brains and stuff, and, you know, goes to, like, a Turkish bath, and it's good fun. And he's just kind of wry and witty and smoking and drinking, you know, vodka in the morning. So he's a good dude, this Anthony Bourdain. He's a good sort.
You know, Charlie, it's very important for people to have role models and individuals you can look up to.
That's right.
And this Anthony Bourdain fellow really sounds like someone that I need to get to know personally.
I think you should make an effort to check out his show, as should our listeners, honestly.
Oh, okay. That's very cool. The only really Food Network show that I watch is this guy called Alton Brown.
No, yeah,
and I think you love him. He's a bit of a geek, but he really goes into the science behind food, and he had this whole show about bread and the chemical properties of yeast, and it was all about molecules, and it was really very interesting to watch.
Well, you know, and I have seen his show, and you're absolutely right. I find it very cool, and it's one of those things where I never remember to actually go watch it on purpose, but it's always kind of fun when I stumble upon it, like, oh yeah, it's this dude. Let's see what he's going on about today. That should be fun.
So yeah, it's... So that sounds great. I'll definitely have to check out the Food Network.
And he's on the Travel Channel now. Interesting. He's like made the jump because I think he wants to be less of a chef and more of just kind of a traveling around doing stuff. So he's actually kind of changed networks for whatever that's worth.
Oh, he jumped ship from the food to the travel. That's very interesting.
Exactly. So, and you know, we're talking about, this is kind of a loose connection, but it of course reminds me the ongoing saga of Hollywood Video, and I just feel I have to mention a couple things, Uncle.
Charlie, you got to go into this. But just for our listeners, give them a brief recap of the Hollywood Video shenanigans.
Yeah, well, this, of course, I'm reminded as well to discuss this by your comment of role models and what a terrible one I am for you. And so here's what I've been up to, folks. And anybody who's been reading The Preserve or listening to the Uncle Cast, you know that... the local Hollywood Video, and I assume Hollywood Video is all over the country, especially as evidenced by slumming around the VHS section of eBay. You'll see this a lot. Hollywood Videos are dumping most of their VHS libraries. And Hollywood...
I believe, Charlie, they're going to straight DVD? Is that what's happening?
Well, they're going to keep some videos. They're going to keep, like, you know, for now, they're going to keep, like, the big titles in each section. Or, additionally, they sometimes are keeping the stuff that's out of print that you can't get on DVD. But, to the same token, they're keeping the stuff that's out of print that they think anyone will ever watch. So, you know, so they're getting rid of a lot of really interesting out-of-print stuff, so long as it's under the bar of whatever criteria they're using to say, like, anyone's rented this in the last 3 years or some such, you know. And I guess some Hollywood Video stores are what they call library stores. I've been learning a lot talking to the managers. And so they've got library stores, which there are some branches in each town whose job it was to have this amazing catalog of videos, you know, not just the top 100, you know, not like the most popular or whatever. They would have literally like 50 or 60,000 videos. And one of our local chains, one of our local Hollywood Videos is the same way, and it's a library store, and they've been getting orders from the home office to dump their VHS tapes. And
now, let me just throw in a little side comment. I have been to this Hollywood Video many times in the past, and the VHS selection they had was mind-boggling. You could just, I remember spending between 2 to 3 hours just wandering around and looking at the various out-of-print rare tapes that you just couldn't find anywhere else. So this this sale of theirs really represents a huge leap in the archival possibilities of the Parry Game Preserve. Quite honestly, you're not going to be able to find any of this stuff anywhere else.
No, absolutely. And especially for, as it goes, really, a dollar each. When you get down into it, these tapes are going out the door at a buck each, and that's just a dangerous place. So really, I've been, you know, basically swinging by Hollywood every other day as they continue to pull, like, hundreds of titles off the shelves. And most recently, a couple weeks ago, they did the action and adventure section. And as you would imagine, that was very dangerous. And in the show notes, and also one of the upcoming posts on the preserve, is going to be kind of a rundown of the tapes I got one day from the action adventure section. And really, they're a lot of fun for like-minded folks who dig on the same stuff we dig on, which is kind of having some beers and watching some Dolph Lundgren movies. That's exactly what these tapes are intended for. So that was an excellent opportunity to get some quality movies, and really some that are out of print, I believe. But most recently, they got another order from the Home Office, which was, of course, more in line with the preserve's aims, which was from the kids section. And I know, Uncle, that you and I have walked around the kids section of this library store, Hollywood Video,
and more than a few times.
Yeah. And just been astounded at the stuff they had, and had often thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if, you know, you could just pick stuff right off the shelf and just buy it when the tape sale happens? Well, I'm happy to report that, you know, mere days ago, that's exactly what happened.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, you know, I got to go down there. They handed me a 2,000 tape list and a cart.
Oh.
And I just kind of walked around with a pen, pulled stuff right off the shelf, and, you know, magic happened, basically. Now, really...
Now, I think I know Charlie pretty well, and this is pretty much heaven for Charlie.
Yeah.
It could not have gotten better.
No, you really can't ask for more than that experience. That was really just... And I told the people there that, as usual, my own brand of infectious enthusiasm permeated the store for a good couple hours while I did my magic.
I'm glad you brought some mirth to the Hollywood Video store employees.
Well, I'll tell you, it was really necessary to be in a mirthful mood when the long-suffering lady had to spend, I believe it was 45 minutes, wringing out my tapes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because, you know...
45 minutes to get you rang up?
Yep, because apparently when you just pull them off the shelf, which is not like something they usually do, this isn't like an offer, this is because I was sweet-talking them. Apparently when they do the actual pull, and it shows how awful a job this really is to do these pulls, each tape has to be wrung out of their, like, store database and then switched over to, like, the for sale database, and then assigned a price, and then eventually sold to a customer. Which means when they get a 2,000 count list from the Home Office, they have to do this for every tape, all 2,000 of them. And so, So for me that day, they had to take all the tapes I was getting and do the same procedure. So, you know, I think they were somewhat being nice, but somewhat honest too. They're like, well, you know, this is, you know, 60 we won't have to do later. And there's the magic number, it's called 62 or something like that. So really what precipitated this, Uncle, and everybody listening who's probably had a hard time avoiding my ranting about Pryor's Place, and what a boon it would be if somehow, you know, someday we could find some Pryor's Place episodes. It dawned on me, and I'm always a little slow, why in God's name don't I go down to Hollywood Video, my library store, and just see if they have Pryor's Place? And I did this a couple weeks ago, and there it was, sitting on the shelf, 2 volumes of Pryor's Place. And so, yeah, you know, I was thinking, okay, well, I can rent this and watch it, but I know they're doing a tape pull soon, so let's see. And of course, lo and behold, I get this list in my hand. I flip to P, and there it is, both volumes of Pryor's Place. And I do, like, the Michael Johnson sprint back to the tape section, and there it is on the shelf. And that was tape number 1 and 2 slammed down on the counter for this lady to begin her good work. So,
oh, that's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, and
really, Charlie, I think this is the genesis, the very beginning, if you will, the initial stages of a massive undertaking, which is going to be to transfer all of these excellent VHS tapes to the DVD format.
That's
because
right.
I would love to get Prior Place on DVD, and this is my only chance.
Yeah, that's true. And remember also the plan in blatant violation of what, you know, one is supposed to do is to actually digitize these episodes and put them up online on the preserve until I receive a cease and desist order from the estate of Richard Pryor, which we'll see if that's soon in coming or not.
But, which, of course, is certainly worth the effort expended into doing
that. Really, yeah, that's its own kind of victory. But and let me just not to continue beating this horse, but just the last point I want to make that I was really delighted about. I found these two Prior's Place tapes. I put them on the counter, and then I went back to actually go from A to Z on the list. And you know, I'm about at D after, you know, a half hour or some such, and I'm kind of near the counter, and I hear this lady go up and start looking at my tapes. And so I you know, turn an interested ear, and she starts saying to the clerk behind the desk, like, "Richard Pryor? A children's show? Whose stupid idea was that?" I was like, "Yeah." Of course, she'd never heard of it, but you see how fascinated this woman was just seconds within that entering her cognitive ability to put Richard Pryor and a kids' TV show together, how infectious and amazing this crazy idea is. So I was delighted that that little vignette happened as I was buying the tapes.
Charlie, you continue to amaze and impress me and all of your listeners.
Well, we all do our best here at the Preserve. That's excellent, Uncle. Well, I feel I've really monopolized the first half of our discussion here, but I'm thinking, Uncle, that it might be just about intermission time.
I think it is as well. Now, do you want to introduce our next special segment?
Uncle, I think that it was your awesome idea. Maybe I'll leave that pleasure all up to you.
Okay, for your listening pleasure, the Parry Game Preserve submits to you a special song for all of the special mothers out there on this Mother's Day.
Oh, a better introduction I cannot imagine. All right, folks, we'll see you in a few minutes.
12? You couldn't be more than 5.
You're so fat, they have to jack you up to take off your shoes.
Yeah, well, you're so skinny, your eyes are in single file.
Well, you're so ugly, your ears stick out to get away from your face.
Well, your mama is
so... Hold it, wait a minute. Don't bring anyone mother into this. She ain't here. And if it wasn't for your mother, you wouldn't be here. So remember, when you put down one mother, you put down mothers all over the world.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I really hope that you enjoyed that because it's one of the finest things ever recorded.
And it really, it has a very nice message. I strongly agree with the message and the way, you know, the way that they conveyed that message.
That's right. Much like the way we started this UncleCast today, we see that, you know, great minds think alike.
That's very right.
Now, you know, Uncle, so a way I
so
guess
speaking,
my... Yeah.
Wait, Charlie, listen to this.
Yeah.
Speaking of great minds thinking alike, if you and I were truly replicants, wouldn't we have the same brain patterns?
Well, it depends how advanced those replicants are. But, you know, that does remind me of perhaps, and certainly, it's one of my very favorite movies. I imagine it's one of the favorite movies of all our listeners, which is Blade Runner. Blade Runner being based on a Philip K. Dick novel, however loosely, though...
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, I think is the title.
That's right. We have a winner. Thank you very much.
Oh!
And so there's an annual sale in this town where I live that is one of the largest in the country, and it's kind of a book sale to support one of the libraries, and it happens twice a year, actually, and I get in a lot of trouble with it every year. I buy tons of books. I never have a chance to actually read them, but they're all fascinating, and they get added to the preserve, of course. And due to my recent fascination on VHS tapes and realizing how quickly they are becoming their own type of
collectible?
Collectible and kind of lost media, you know? Like another thing, much like the toys and games that we focus on, these movies and these visual and audio imprints are becoming lost as well. So, of course, they immediately appeal. And this book sale, due to its popularity, has really kind of expanded its scope, and they have a ton of records, and in the past couple of years, they've offered a lot of tapes and DVDs, and it, much to my failing, it's a section I hadn't looked at very much in the past, but this year I did. On the first day, the prices are kind of high, and they go down every subsequent day, so it's fun to go on the first day and the last day if you actually have some big items that you're looking for. Maybe you can snap them up the first day, and then you go on the last day and just kind of take whatever looks interesting, basically, for free.
Right.
So, you know, I went to this sale and picked up a couple Olaf Stapledon books from the 70s, who's this sci-fi writer I've been reading, and I've mentioned him a little bit on the preserve, but also in the VHS section, I picked up two things. One of them was The Wizard. And, Uncle, you might be familiar with The Wizard as...
Oh, of course. The perennial Fred Savage film.
That's right. Featuring, before it was available to the general public, Super Mario Brothers 3.
Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah, which
Charlie,
I remember seeing in theater.
I distinctly remember being a young boy and being unable to sleep because I was so excited that I was getting taken to see The Wizard the next day by one of the five.
That is great. That is fantastic. Because I was the same way. I had heard the buzz. I was so into Nintendo when it came out. Like, that was everything. That was the way it was. And that this movie was coming out with a sneak preview of this like
of Super Mario Brothers 3.
It was. I remember. Yeah, I still remember the anticipation.
I also remember watching the wizard himself, who's kind of like this autistic, bizarre kid that is really good at Nintendo games, playing Double Dragon in an arcade stand-up in the truck stop of, I don't know where it was, some restaurant?
That's right, yeah.
So. And I remember being 9 years old thinking to myself, wait a minute, that's the NES version that he's playing. How is he able to play that on an upright? They should have used the actual Technos arcade game.
Ah.
But that, of course... That wouldn't promote the Nintendo Entertainment System, which was the whole point of the movie.
Dude, I love how you are more hardcore than the video game autistic kid in the movie.
Like, I remember sitting there being like, wait a minute, I love Double Dragon. That's the Nintendo version, not the far superior arcade version.
Oh, and for all our listeners at home, this is not anywhere near to a lie. This is the God's honest truth that the uncle is...
No, I'm not making any of this up. This is true.
The uncle is an absolute wizard, so to speak, at Double Dragon, and it's really something to watch.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind.
Yeah. And so you know, I saw The Wizard there for on videotape, and it was just way too much to pass up. Just so beautiful. I'm like, all right, I'm getting The Wizard because I got to do it. And then I was just kind of looking around, and you know, because I really zero in a little too closely. I was like, oh, maybe there's some Pryor's Place tapes. I mean, of course there's not going to be any damn Pryor's Place tapes because who owns them? No one. So I'm looking around for Pryor's Place tapes, and I know full well there aren't going to be any, but I'm drifting over for some reason, having given up on the P's, to the B's, and I see Blade Runner. And I'm always kind of interested in you know, seeing a nice copy of Blade Runner. I pull it off the shelf, and I look at it and do a double take, because this is the non-director's edition Blade Runner that I found, and you really have to be a total kind of sci-fi VHS release media dork to care at all about that. But Blade Runner came out on two or three different types. Like, there was one on Laserdisc, there were two on VHS, and the director's cut is actually the one everybody's seen. It's a much more common one. There was even a bootleg going around in the early 90s where somebody had recorded the non-director's cut off of TV. Because, like, CBS showed it someday. For some reason, they got a hold of the non-director's cut and the bootleg of it. Yeah, and somebody captured it. And the bootleg of that was really highly prized because it was so hard to get. So since high school, I'd been kind of off and on interested in kind of one day. And it's probably on eBay. I haven't even bothered looking. But it's one of those things I'd kind of forgotten about, that getting this non-director's cut Blade Runner, which has a few subtle differences. I hear the unicorn dream sequence is different. I hear that there's a change in the end, like it's a bad ending instead of a good ending.
An alternate ending.
Like definitely a different ending, you know. And so there it was, and I was delighted and ecstatic. And here is, for whatever reason, somebody had this in their house, and they donated it to the book sale. I cannot fathom why. So that was kind of the excitement, I guess, of last week, was really stumbling, 10, 15 years later on the non-director's cut Blade Runner VHS tape. So that's now been safely added to the preserve, and hopefully we'll I really want to do side-by-side viewing of it and the director's cut so I can report fully on all the differences.
That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. Maybe you should have me over, and we could have several vodka tonics and watch them side by side.
That's the best thing for clarity of thought.
It truly is. So, to switch gears for a moment, I have recently decided to invest and upgrade my cable package. I have IO Digital Cable, and I now have the ability, I got a new set-top box, to record television.
All right, that sounds dangerous and awesome. Very good.
Now, this is an awesome thing that I hadn't bought. I'm of course, a little late, you know, a little slow on the uptake. Charlie has had this thing for, I don't know, what, a year and a half now?
Yeah, something like that. Well, that was all, you know, due to my wife's good advice, was that, you know, we should get one of these digital things, and it's very handy. So.
It really is. I'm the type of person, for whatever reason, I just can't get it together. I cannot watch the same television show at the same time on a consistent basis. I miss episodes. I get sidetracked on the internet.
Hey, yeah, you can record The Sopranos now and not throw off the Uncle Cast, right?
Exactly. But anyway, one of the channels that I just stumbled onto is Fox Sports, and it's a Spanish language channel.
Oh.
And this channel, on Sunday nights, starting at midnight and going into 1 a.m., they have Lucha Libre, which is Mexican professional wrestling.
With the mask?
And almost everyone has a mask, except for the villains. The villains don't wear masks.
Oh, the villains don't wear masks. I didn't know that. Okay.
I think the masks are exclusive to the good guys.
Ah, okay. I see.
One of my personal favorites, whose name is in my best announcing voice, El Demian Cestes.
That's pretty good.
He has makeup, and he has 666, and he's got this crazy makeup face.
No
and, you know,
way.
Yeah, he's great. I love him.
He's all Damien from The Omen?
Right, yeah. He's supposed to be the evil guy. He's teamed up with Halloween, who has this orange and green face paint, and he's another villain.
No way. Oh, that's great.
And then the third guy is, like, Mr. Arroyo, who's just, like, a normal guy. I don't know. He's not like evil or satanic or Halloween. He just kind of hangs out and has a weird haircut.
He was hanging out down by the Home Depot. They went and, yeah.
Exactly. He was working at U-Haul with the other two of them. And they were like, why don't you join our evil, like, triple tag team?
Okay, like, hey, sounds good.
Yeah, and he was like, all right, I'm not doing anything.
So they're all villains, right? Of course.
Right, and they wrestle against, I guess, the good guys. So
now this is far after the days of El Santo. Like, he's long retired, right?
Well, yeah, no, Santo, the man in the silver mask himself, of which Charlie and I each own a different lucha movie.
That's right. The horror convention, the monster horror convention that we went to. Oh,
That's right. Santo, for an entire generation of basically Spanish children, was their equivalent to Superman. And he was so popular that movie studios decided to cash in on the craze and made any number of serials starring Santo. And I have Santo in the Wax Museum, and I think Charlie has a team-up movie with Santo, Mil Mascaras, and the Blue Demon, where, like, they all, you know, they really wanted, I guess it was the Freddy versus Jason of the Lucha movies.
Yeah, it really, it looks great, and, you know, I gotta say, I haven't watched it yet, because it's one of those things, kind of like Pryor's Place, that I feel, you know, you and I have to watch together over those vodka tonics, so we can really kind of take it in at the same time.
See, that's true. I kind of ditched you because I watched Santo in the Wax Museum not by myself. I made my parents watch part of it.
Oh, that's great.
I have to say it was a letdown.
Yeah.
It wasn't nearly as insane as I had hoped it would be.
Were you drinking enough vodka tonics?
I was sober. That could have been the problem.
Well, that's problem one. You know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, right. That's totally cool, because really I should watch my stuff too, because it's rare that we find ourselves in the same geographic location. But, you know, given all the other stuff that's always on my plate, I figure, well, you know, I'll shelve this for now, and if it's a real rainy day, you know, maybe me and El Santo got to hang out. But hasn't happened quite yet.
And listeners, what a shelf that is. Let me tell you, I've seen a portion of Charlie's DVD, PlayStation, CD, and VHS collection, and it takes up its basically its own entire room.
Yeah, well, and it spills over now, unfortunately.
That's right.
I've had to kind of group it into the primary and the secondary stash so that, you know, one room can hold the primary at least.
And the real sickness comes into play when I say something like, oh, Charlie, why don't you let me borrow your G1 Transformer DVDs? And he says,
well,
no way.
Because I say, well, you know, uncle, those are pretty hard to come by these days, and they're signed by Peter Cullen. I mean, what the hell?
No, I offered to take the non-signed ones, and even you said no effing way.
That's true. Well, you know, interestingly, and I got to segue just for a quick second here, do you know anything about the fact, the re-release of Transformers, the series, the animated series, on DVD? Because we had heard, you know, the movie's coming out, that's supposed to, you know, it's part of the marketing hype. I think they're kind of late on it, but maybe I just missed it. Like, is it out? Is it coming out? What's the deal?
Okay. My understanding of the situation is this. The people that re-released Transformers, the cartoon movie, which you bought and haven't watched, and I haven't bought or watched.
Hey, I watched it in 1985, but yeah, continue.
Yeah, I know. Charlie has honestly seen this movie like 30 times in the past. But anyway, it was produced by, I think, Sony BMG, which was a component of Sony that made DVDs.
Hmm.
Now, this studio had plans to re-release all of the G1 Transformers to, of course, capitalize on the massive hype generated by this summer's live-action movie.
Yeah, of course, of course.
However, I have heard on the internet, on the wonderful site, TFW2005.com, which is short for Transformers World 2005, that Sony BMG, the DVD division, was shut down.
No way. Okay.
So my understanding is that the rights, or I don't know who the rights reverted to and if we're even going to get a DVD release, which is really heartbreaking because I want to watch all of G1 Transformers, and if I want to do that, I have to spend like $200 on Season 1 Part 1 on eBay.
And, you know, I don't even have, honestly, Uncle, I don't have all the Rhino releases either. So
you didn't? You never completed the Rhino collection?
No, I only have three. I think they're five or six. Yeah, and
oh.
So I was actually eagerly anticipating this re-release, both because it would make the Rhino tapes or the Rhino DVDs cheaper, which I then planned to buy to complete my collection, you know, because I would rather have all the Rhino stuff. So I was hoping it'd be re-released, which would affect the prices of the older ones, because people would want the newer ones instead. But this is, what a colossal cock-up. Like, this is, you know,
serious.
Like He-Man, Thundercats, all of the stuff has experienced DVD release. It's really a
Charlie,
thing that they can't get their act together.
Charlie, it's not even the regular He-Man that has a DVD release. It is the new adventures of He-Man, which was when He-Man slimmed down and got a combed, parted hairstyle and a laser sword.
It's not even the
redesign them. That is on DVD.
It's not even the classic? Are you kidding me? I had no
idea. No. The classic has been completely released on DVD. They're really dipping in deep into the well and releasing the unpopular He-Man sequel that everyone hated.
All right, well, that makes more, that now I see your point. And exactly.
You see my point. So they go it's so far removed from being actually popular and something that people would buy, yet it gets a release. I was in Best Buy today, and I saw this Filmation cartoon from the 80s called Black Star.
Black Star! Dude, I have a whole line of those toys I just discovered in the storage bins, but please continue.
Yes, apparently the entire Black Star series is out in one DVD, and I was like, Black Star? Who the hell is that?
I gotta get that. Fantastic. Because I don't remember watching it as a kid. I'd never even heard of it till I found it in the storage bin.
I had no memory of Black Star whatsoever, and apparently, someone was like, yeah, well, we got the rights, we'll release it.
Wow.
So we're really reaching a very interesting time in being a DVD collector, because all this stuff is coming out.
Yet Transformers, which is on everybody's tongue this year, comedians, the news, everybody is talking about it because it's just the hot commodity, and that cannot find its own release. It's astounding to me.
It really is astounding. The entire 80s Dungeons & Dragons cartoon is out on DVD and Transformers not.
That's right.
Just not fair.
And I'm delighted, of course, along with the She-Ra and He-Man Christmas special, that I purchased the entire Dungeons & Dragons set that we discussed on a previous Uncle Cap.
Of course.
Now, just as an aside to our aside to our aside, when you were in Best Buy, did you happen to look under V in the TV shows section? Because under V, I saw recently, and it is a tremendous failing that I have not, sucked it up and gone and gotten these yet, they're releasing the original Voltron cartoon.
Charlie, it's funny you mention that, because I saw Volume 1 and Volume 3 of the re-released Voltron cartoon.
And
I'd actually been meaning to speak to you, because I have very little memory of how good the cartoon actually is.
Well, I mean, like many kind of Japanese animation franchises from that period, there's a lot of recycled footage, there's a lot of kind of derivative plots, but it's still a very important series that I think, regardless of anything else, is important just on its own merits.
So you say I should get 1 and 3?
Well, I say you should get 1. I mean, you might as well start with 1, but what I wanted to speak to, and this is, my sickness, because it goes beyond just, seeing the show, it deals with the packaging also. When you saw it, was it in a metal tin that was stamped to look like one of the heads of the lions?
I believe Volume 1 was Blue Lion, and Volume 3 was Green Lion.
Excellent, because I was blown away by that packaging, and the fact that they're going to do a different lion for each volume, so great. I just, that wins me over hook, line, and sinker, just as you would imagine, as you know.
See, again, I'd like to think I know Charlie very well, and while he says, oh, just get one, it will not stop at that for Charlie. If he has Blue Lion, he will, by default, have to acquire the other 4 to have the complete 5-lion set.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't sleep at night, absolutely. and I merely say, just get Volume 1 for you, Uncle. That's the thing, because if you haven't really experienced it, I think you should check it out, but you certainly shouldn't go in, totally all the way and get everything they have on the shelf. You definitely should start out kind of baby steps and check it out. Or let me buy them and come over and watch.
Here's the thing. Unlike Charlie, I actually feel guilty when I spend money on digital video discs and fail to watch them.
I'm feeling more guilty lately, but yes.
My younger brother actually has, I think, all of the Thundercats DVDs. He just bought them. And I haven't watched a single episode.
Has he?
So, no, he's watched them all.
Oh.
And I feel like I have a lot of cartoons that I have to get through, and I just feel guilty buying more when I already have the Tick Season 1 that I haven't watched.
Yeah.
I have The Adventures of Superman 1 through 3. I have Batman the Animated Series, but I still haven't watched Volume 1 and 3. I watched 2 and 4. So there's just so much stuff to watch.
Well, look, Uncle, I'll tell you this. Voltron is more important than any of those series, and so you should go get it. That's my
advice. You see, Charlie, that's where you're wrong. In terms of cartoons, nothing is more important than Batman and the Animated Series.
Well, I know.
Because it is legitimately good.
It does have its following, and I like it too. But I feel that, you know, a lot of stuff started with Voltron, and I'll defend it till the end.
Just like Voltron defended the universe, Charlie.
You're damn right. That's right. Very nice, Uncle. Now, you know, we were going on about the Transformers DVD release, and that certainly puts me in mind of our larger topic, and I know that the countdown is dwindling until BotCon 2007.
Oh, it certainly is, Charlie. I think I'm at day 43.
43. All right.
So 43 days left until BotCon. When I started the countdown, it was 101.
That's pretty serious. That is over halfway by my rudimentary mathematics.
No, that's true. It really, it's gaining on us like, can't even think of a funny metaphor. It's just rapidly approaching.
That's right. Now, you shared with me, Uncle, a distressing, a upsetting, a nigh worldview-shattering bit of news concerning the Transformers film that you are going to get a sneak preview of at BotCon 2007. You want
that
to share
is
that
correct.
With our, yeah, you should maybe share that with our listeners to really, you know, give them the same weak-kneed, open-mouth experience that I had.
So, again, I was on the wonderful website, tfw2005.com. All of you who even have a passing interest in Transformers should check it out. And they had a spy report about the upcoming live-action movie directed by Michael Bay and starring Shia LaBeouf that said that the Goo Goo Dolls were going to be performing the love song in the film. Now, that statement, when I read it, I was afraid that I was going to just have an aneurysm right then and there. A schizoid embolism, if you will.
Just right at work. Boom! That's it. Done.
Boom, and that was it. I just have, you know, I would just drop dead. Because that statement has so many faults with it. I mean, number one, the Goo Goo Dolls are on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, is this 1999 that we're dealing with? Is this a movie about Nicolas Cage, who's an angel, falling in love with Meg Ryan?
Yeah.
No, this is a movie about thousands or millions of years old alien robots that come to our planet and fight. Why do we need a love song in this movie?
Exactly. It just speaks to a much larger problem that that a song of this type is in the film, which gives us really terrifying insight into perhaps some of its makeup.
Now, again, I mean, I think it would be lame, but, like, let's say, for example, well, I've never really understood the reason why they have boy Transformers and girl Transformers, because gender seems like, why would you need it? Like,
yeah.
I don't think they can reproduce. I'm sure there's a couple of really, really frightening fan fiction stories that deal with that.
Oh, I bet there
but
are.
In my mind, you know, there's really no reason to have gendered robots. But, all right, maybe I guess if there's like a girl-sounding robot and a guy-sounding robot and they like each other, you could maybe play a love song between the two of them. But that's still kind of creepy and weird.
Yeah, I can't decide which one's going to be worse, Uncle, if they actually have, like, Hot Rod and RC-esque, you know, robots, and they do some sort of terrible love subplot with them, or whether it's simply, you know, two of the douchebag humans that the Transformers are kind of protecting, you know, alternately fighting, so that the Autobots are protecting, are, you know, whatever, having some sort of love thing. I'm not sure really which is worse, because the humans in love indicates that it's probably going to be, you know, in order
that the
to get
focus will be on a human love story,
right,
and not on Megatron trying to kill every human being on the planet.
Precisely,
which is what it should be about.
Right, for the audience, you know, sympathy tie-in, oh, let's have the huge human element and really play that up, and the Transformers are kind of secondary to the plot, which I'm afraid is going to be how it goes.
I it's hard for me to have lower expectations than I already do going into this movie. But that just really made the bottom drop out.
Yeah, that just
I mean,
came right off the tracks with that one.
It really, the plane crashed into the mountainside. The way I look at the Transformers film, if there's at least one good action sequence, I'll be okay. Just give me one awesome, like, solid 15-minute sequence that's really just well done. Something almost like the truck chase from Terminator 2.
Ah, there you go. Or
something along those lines.
The truck chase from Terminator 3 I enjoyed as well, and I know I'm in the vast minority on that one. But I actually...
Oh, no, with the giant crane? That was a wonderful sequence.
I thought that was a pretty balls-out couple minutes there.
I actually heard an anecdote, I don't know if it's true or not, that they didn't have enough money to complete that sequence, and Arnold Schwarzenegger himself wrote the production team a check to get it done right.
That's awesome. I really hope that's true.
And even if it's not true, I choose to believe it. So
I think right now we will say on the UncleCast, on the Perry Game Preserve, that this is fact.
That's right. This is the fact. You see, we started off as two people that tried to do our best and represent things the way that they actually were. Now we're making the transition to actual media outlet.
We're
making up the details.
We can make reality on the... This is how reality is made on the internet, Uncle.
That's very frightening.
Yeah, that's so there you go. Arnold, the governor of California, cut a check for my favorite smash-em-up truck car vehicle chase scene in Terminator 3 that very few people have seen.
Again, remember, Charlie, this was prior to him becoming the governor when all this is filmed.
That's
so
true.
He probably said to himself, this movie better, you know, we got to have an awesome sequence so people vote for me.
That's true. Oh, what a great idea. You know, and also, in indie movie news, I recently read somewhere that, and I don't remember the name or the group, but that some conglomerate of people has just purchased the Terminator rights for like 25
My friend was telling me about that.
Yeah. Because apparently it was one of these really amazing things that it wasn't owned by a major studio, the rights to this whole franchise. And these guys picked up the rights and they want to make a new trilogy. But that's, of course, as far as they've gotten. But that, you know, at least there's you know, some interest behind it.
But they do own the rights.
They have actually purchased the rights. So at least, you know, now they've got this huge amount of money sunk into it. So that should be a little incentive.
To actually make something out of it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, that'll be kind of interesting. I don't think they're going to get... Maybe they'll have Arnold do a cameo or something, but I certainly don't think the plan is to have him reprise his role. But, you know, they haven't done anything with it yet, so who knows what they're going to try. It's interesting, nonetheless.
You know, that is really interesting, because over the weekend, I was watching Tango and Cash with a good friend of mine.
Fantastic.
And he had made the point to me that there should be a movie where all of the 80s action icons that get together.
Oh, my God, it would be amazing.
And I think even if they could just get cameos from someone like Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell and maybe even Dolph Lundgren, for this new Terminator trilogy, it would just be excellent.
Oh, my God, blow the doors right off. That'd be fantastic.
It really would.
Now, and just merely to tie back to your previous comment that you feel the Transformers movie of 2007 will be saved in your eyes if it can deliver one solid action scene, and I know a lot of people have been very distraught that Michael Bay was put at the helm, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Michael Bay directed Bad Boys 2, right? He was behind that?
He did direct Bad Boys 2. He also directed Armageddon.
Well, okay, let's forget about anything else he may have ever done because it's of questionable quality, but he's focusing...
No, he did do Con Air.
Okay, let's talk about then Con Air and Bad Boys 2. Both of which, and I've only seen Bad Boys 2 once. I saw it in the theater. I had a great time. It was really long, and it was just like I was in the right mood for a crazy action movie. I felt that it delivered scene after scene of ridiculous, like, just over-the-top action, and it was a pretty good time for 2+ hours, whatever it was. And so when I heard that he was in charge of Transformers, while I felt that it wouldn't get the treatment I would have hoped for it, like a really... I don't even know what I would have hoped for, but after it being built up in everybody's mind so much, you want something great. But I had to at least believe when I heard that at the very least he would be able to deliver a couple really decent and solid action scenes that may not have any furtherance of the plot or any good segue between scenes, but at least those action scenes themselves should really be pretty crazy and pretty good. So I'm hoping, Uncle. That's just what I think.
It's good to take a positive attitude with these things. A lot of the robot designs for the movie have come under heavy criticism,
absolutely.
And I agree.
Yes, absolutely.
But I have to say, at least with the alternate modes, I understand that you cannot have Optimus Prime be a flat-nosed semi-truck from 1986.
Yeah.
It is the year 2007, and his Mack truck design, while the paint job sucks,
yeah,
I think it's a good design, solid design for the vehicle mode of Optimus Prime.
Yeah,
the robot mode with the exploded parts that reassemble,
yeah,
not so much.
Yeah, I think that was a misstep. But, you know, I agree with the argument that, you know, it's 2007. We can't have a bunch of cars driving around like it's 1984. We do have to update it a little bit. And that's a fair argument. I can see that.
Yeah, that's true. The other Autobots, remains to be seen. And especially Megatron. I don't know what they did with Megatron, but they just, I think they screwed the pooch with that one.
Yeah,
Starscream's plane mode, I think it's a Raptor.
Huh.
The airplane that it's based, that he essentially is, looks awesome. But again, his robot mode, from what I've seen, looks like crap.
Yeah, I don't understand why that decision was made, but...
I would have much rather preferred clean-looking robot modes as opposed to just, you know, I got shot with a missile launcher, let me repeat myself.
Right, yeah, absolutely. So it's difficult to say why they made that decision. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully there'll be some really solid action and we can all just kind of be glad for that and take it at face value for what it's worth and, you know, it just kind of consider it a part of a larger franchise, some highs, some lows.
Right.
So, but...
Well,
yeah.
Charlie, I think that just about wraps it up.
I think you're absolutely right, Uncle. Thank you for an excellent discussion of those topics that everybody is interested in.
Oh, thank you, Charlie, and thanks to our listeners.
Yeah, everybody, thank you for joining us today. I hope you've learned something. I hope you had some fun. And most of all, I hope that everybody sent their mother some flowers and a card today. And if not, you know, it's never too late.
That's right. Treat your mother right, guys.
That's right. Treat her right. Treat her right. All right, Uncle, you have a great week.
You too, Charlie.
All right, bye.
Bye.